दिन्यामिन्यौ सायाघ्रात शिशिरवसन्तौ पुनरायात् काल क्रीडति गच्छति आयु तदपि न मुञ्चति आशावायु. So in this beautiful book called Bhaj Govindam, which we have a lot of copies in the office, Bhagavan Shankaracharya tells us how to live our life. It's a very beautiful, very practical book. One of the famous verses, he says, Dinya Minyo Saya Prata Shishira Vasantau Punaraya. He says, day and night, dawn and dusk, winter and summer and spring, Punarayat, again and again they come. You know, days change into night, night into day, winter changes to summer, summer to fall, and so on. Kala kridati gachati ayu. He says the time is laughing at us. Kala, time, kala is said to be, time also said to be death. Time is laughing at us, playing. Tadapina munchati asha vayu. Even still, the human being does not give up desire. And then he says, what is the solution? Bhaj Govindam, Bhaj Govindam, Govindam Bhaj Mudamate. He says, throughout life, people know that the time is coming, the time is ending. Sooner or later, I have to leave this earth. But still, the fire of desire keeps on burning, working, acquiring, possessing. And there are very few people who seek Govind, who seek the Lord. He says, you fool, you're wasting your time in these material pursuits. The important thing that will carry you, that will go with you, are your spiritual actions. So seek that, pursue that. This 16th chapter in that way is a very practical chapter. After having studied some of the higher truths in the 15th and 13th and all, here Sri Krishna is giving us a very practical roadmap on how to live our life. And so as we had talked before, also the first three verses list the 26 values that we should practice. And then after that, after the third verse onwards, the rest of the chapter deals with things that we should not do. So he calls them Deva and Asura. The first three people who have those qualities, the divine qualities, the qualities of love and compassion and sharing and kindness, unselfishness, are called Devas. And the rest of us, majority of us, fall in the category of Asuras, where we know what is right, but we are still unable to practice it. We know, because we have read the Bhagavad Gita, we have read the Bible, the Guru Granth Sahib. We know what is right, what is wrong, but we are not able to practice. And in the last few weeks, we have been dealing with the qualities of such people in quite a bit of detail. Today, the verse number 18 is the last verse which deals with the qualities of these people. What are their qualities? That's the 18th verse. And then the 19th and the 20th, if we can get done today, three verses. The 19th and 20th will tell us what happens to these people who live their life. Where do they go? Where do they end up? What is their final destination? Not only this life, but multiple lives. So it's very beautifully covered. So we'll do verse number 18, which talks about the qualities of these individuals whom Krishna calls asuras. Aham karam balam darpam, kamam krodham cha samshritaha, mamatma paradeheshu, pradvishantobhyasuyakaha. So, what are the qualities these people have? Ahamkaram. Ahamkaram is ego. The sensation of I do, I am, I. That is ego. Ego here does not mean pride. Here ego means I sense, that I am the doer. So that I sense. And then balam darpam. Balam is power. Darpam is arrogance. Kamam, kamam is desire, lust. Krodham, krodham is anger. Tasamshritaha. So these people are full of these five qualities. Ego, arrogance, power, lust, anger. Gurudev says, out of five, even one quality, if we have, it is enough to sink us. If you have anger or pride, but these people have all five. And it's, as we said, we are not talking about somebody walking in the street or is talking about us. We have these qualities. And he says, Krishna says, what happens to such people? What do they do as a result of all these qualities? Mam, mam means Krishna says I, when he means Krishna says I, he means not only Krishna as the flute player of Vrindavan, but Krishna as the self, as the lord of all beings, as the support of everything, the Brahman, the consciousness. When he says mam, he identifies himself with the total consciousness, Brahman, the lord. He says mama, me, atma paradeheshu. Not only I am in them, but I am in everybody. That's what the Krishna says. Pradishanto, such people hate me, God, not only in themselves, but in all others. Abhyasuyaka, they are the lowest kind of people. They are the ones who are hate God, who criticize, who are of these negative tendencies. So, let us spend a little bit time talking about why are these particular qualities and why Krishna chooses them in this order. So what is ahamkar? Ahamkar is body identification, that I am this body. Actually, the whole world starts with the understanding that I am the body. Like in deep sleep, we have no body identification, right? You don't know who you are. You don't, whether you are rich or poor, whether you are a king or a beggar, whether you're sleeping in a palace on a comfortable bed or you're sleeping in a sidewalk in Mumbai in India. The deep sleep, everybody is the same. You have no body identification. People don't say, you know, I'm going to put on makeup and put on nice clothes before I go to sleep. I don't know whom I'm going to meet in my dream. A girl doesn't say, maybe I'll meet some nice boy, so I should be well dressed. No, that's why they say in Kaivalya Upanishad, Swapne sa jiva sukha dukha bhokta swamayaya kalpit jiva loke. So in dream, I create my own world of joys and sorrows where I'm going somewhere and meeting somebody. And a beggar may dream that he's a king, and a king may dream he's a beggar. So in dream or in deep sleep, we do not have this body identification. We have the subtle body in the dreams. In the dream, we have a subtle body, the mind and intellect. And then in deep sleep, of course, we are in the level of ignorance where we don't have any body identification. And we find that body identification is not there in childhood. A child does not have any. That's why he or she will just take off their clothes and run around naked. And you know, they have no fear. They have nothing. No. But then we start telling, no. You know, you have to put on clothes. You shouldn't roam around without clothes. And this is. And then you are this body. We instill in our children this body identification. And from this body identification starts this ego, that I am the doer, I do everything. Is there any God who is giving you the energy, the ability? No. I am so smart, I am so intelligent, I studied so much, I worked so hard, and therefore I am successful, and I. So this I problem starts as we get older, and that is the source of all the problems. Because from I, when we become we, you know, and then from we, then you expand it to the whole universe. That is how you lessen your ego. But the more you think about I and mine, even in a family, you know, people start thinking, I alone am important. Nobody else. I don't need to listen to my spouse. Don't need to listen to my children. I am going to decide. So that's when all the problems arise, this ego, this arrogance. And what happens, this ego is not satisfied just by the ego itself, it goes to the next one, balam. It says, I need power to enforce my will upon others because I have to become more powerful. So I need more power to enforce my will upon others so that I can then be the most powerful. I can be the president. I can be the CEO. I can be the, you know, the most powerful businessman in the area. So that's what happens. That's what they say. Do not have love of power, have power of love. It's very interesting. See, when you have love of power, then you get arrogance, darpam. Then you want to impose your will upon others. But when you utilize the power of love, that is the opposite. That is where you have sharing, where you have compassion, where you have... So these people, they are so drunk with their love of power that they get very arrogant. So ahamkaram balam darpam, it leads to arrogance. And then arrogance leads to kamam and krodham, because now I have so much power, I am so arrogant, then I must acquire, I must be the most rich, I must be the most powerful. So lust and desire arises. And then when I don't get what I want, leads to anger. Talking about anger, this lady was very upset at her husband because she had gone through a nasty divorce at her ex-husband. So she was walking on the beach and she was very angry and she saw a lamp and she kicked it, you know, and as always happens, when you kick a lamp on the beach, out came a genie. And the genie said, look, I'm very angry because you kicked me and I see you are angry too. So he says, I'll give you 3 wishes. I have to, you know, that's the law. But I'll one thing, since you're angry at your husband, whatever you get, your husband will get double. So she says, give me $1,000,000. So genie says, no problem. Here's $1,000,000 in, you know, 3 suitcases. He says, your husband got 6 suitcases. He got 2 million. She's very unhappy. You know, this is not working. She said, give me a mansion. So there's a beautiful house comes up on the beach. And he said, look, these 2 new houses, they are your husband's. Are ye toh ye kaam hi nahi kar raha, is getting worse. So she says, you know what? I want to donate 1 kidney. So that's what anger does. You punish yourself to punish somebody else. So that's what these people live their life, full of, you know, pride and jealousy and anger and arrogance and all. And then as a result of that, they hate the divinity, because we all have divine qualities in us. Nobody is 100% black or 100% white. We are all a mixture of good and bad. Even the most evil person, when he goes home, when he sees his child, his heart will melt. He will hug him. He will embrace his child. He will do anything, sacrifice for his child. Even a gangster or a criminal won't want his son to become a criminal. He'll say, even though I am a criminal, I want my son to go to school and become, you know, somebody. I do not want him to be like me. So we are a mixture of good and bad qualities, all of us. But these people hate the goodness within themselves. They do not allow it to come up. Even though they have, anytime these divine qualities come up, they feel little compassion or little kindness, they immediately suppress that. And not only that, but paradeheshu, even in others, they cannot tolerate good qualities, divinity. Anytime they see anything good, they want to suppress it, they want to put it down. And that's the kind of evil people Krishna is talking about. He says, and that's what we see, you know. You may say that in the olden days, there used to be demons, you know, like Ravan and Kamsa and all. And if you think about Ravan, he knew that Ram was coming for him. He was going to cross the ocean. And he knew that it is God incarnate himself appearing on earth as Ram. But he still did not. He still kept on hating him. Till the end, he said, I'm going to fight him. I'm going to show that I am more powerful. I'm not going to give up Sitaji. Kamsa was the same thing. He knew that the 8th child of Devaki. So Kamsa knew that the eighth child of Devaki, Krishna, is still alive and is going to one day come and get me. But he didn't change his ways. Why? Because they are so entrenched in their love for power that they, in fact, they actually hated God. That's what they show about if you read the Ramayana and the Bhagavad, that these people positively hated God. It's not only that they were negative or indifferent, but they actually had hatred, they actually had arrogance, they actually had anger. And even the existence of God, they doubt. They say, who is God? There's nothing. How did this world, we had read in the earlier verses, how did the world come about? Through lust. Man and woman met and children came out. Forget the same thing. Plants, you know, the male and the female, you know, parts of the plant, they meet and meat and new seeds are made in animals. Everything is all a union of lust. There is no divinity. There is no Bhagavan. There is no God. There is nobody who created this world except we. You know, we the powerful people. We are the... So that kind of arrogance, they even deny the existence of God. And who is God? You know, they say God, Brahman. Of course, God, one is the form. You know, where is this Ganpati or Krishna or Mother Durga or Jesus or Buddha, the form. Or the other is the formless Brahman, that is called Sat, Chit and Anand. So what are the three? I thought I would just explain a little bit about the nature of this formless consciousness, Brahman, which is called Sat, Chit and Anand. The Sat is translated as existence, Chit is consciousness and Anand is bliss. So how can you prove the existence of God, that God exists, Sat? How can you prove that? They say the fact that anything exists proves the existence of God, like there is a wooden table. That proves that God exists. Why do you say that? Because wooden table came from wooden trees. And trees exist because of existence. Because it is, think about it, you know, this whole universe is made of atoms. In fact, even our scriptures thousands of years ago, they said that Anu, they call them atom, Anu will come together to create this universe. Anu come together. So they knew about the atomic theory thousands of years ago, much before Einstein and, you know, all the Oppenheimer and all of these. So atoms, which are just particles, how do they all come together to create all these planets and stars and all these, you know, trees and everything, whatever exists, proves the existence of God. So Sat, anything that exists, proves that there has to be a power that created all this because of which things exist. Otherwise, the world was empty. That's what even the Bible says, God alone was. And then in 7 days, he created the world. So what the point was that he out of himself created, became, because nothing else, there was no air, space, fire, water, earth. God, consciousness, Brahman, the Father in heaven, himself became the five elements. And then the five elements got together, created the atoms and then the molecules and the whole universe. So Sat is existence. Now that is at the lowest level. Sat means existence. Then there is Chit or consciousness. Now the table exists. But the table, does the table know it exists? No. I know the table exists, or you know, because we are conscious. So we have consciousness. A dog or a cat may know that the table exists, but the dog or cat really doesn't know, you know, where did the table come from? Is if it's a wooden table, how was it made? A carpet? It doesn't know anything. All they know is there's a table, I shouldn't hit my head on it. And they do not know that I am Sat and Chit, but those of us, since we have gone to these classes, listened to Swamiji, so we know that I am Sat and I am Chit. I am conscious. I am conscious of this table, I am conscious of the chair, I am conscious of all of you, and you are all conscious of me speaking. So why? Because we are consciousness. So we are not only Sat, but we are Chit. So that is the next step. Sat and then Chit. And Chit is subtler than Sat. Sat is this body, mind, intellect, whatever exists. Chit is the consciousness, the awareness. The consciousness in me, the God's presence in me, makes me aware. It makes me aware of my body, makes me aware of my mind, my thoughts, my emotions, my desires, vasanas. It makes me aware of the whole world of objects, emotions, and thoughts. So it is the consciousness, the awareness, that makes me aware of this whole world. So chit is subtler than sat. Consciousness is subtler. Consciousness you cannot see. The body you can see, the mind and intellect you are aware of, but the consciousness we are not aware of, but it is that which is enlivening my mind and intellect. Then does consciousness, can it be present without existence? Can chit be present without sat? Yes. Because in deep sleep, I am not aware of my body, but my mind is also sleeping. But I am still conscious. The Lord within me is still alive and still functioning. That's why my heart is beating, my lungs are, you know, breathing, and my, you know, all my internal organs are working. Not only that, but even after I drop this body, after I leave this body, me, the consciousness, never dies. That's what Sri Krishna says in the second chapter, that na sato vidyate bhava, na bhavo vidyate sataha. He says that which exists and that which is subtler, that can never become non-existent. The consciousness, Brahman, that's why he says the fire cannot burn it, the water cannot wet it, knives cannot cut it. So what it means is that this soul, this consciousness, this Atman, the Brahman, can exist even when the body does not exist. Even when all of us drop our body and we are no longer living, the consciousness in us, which is God, which is, that's why they say God always was, is, and always will be. This whole universe will end, you know, one fine day in a few billion years, but the consciousness will exist. And what is Anand? Swami Ishwaranandaji in his commentary very beautifully says that when I become one with that chit, when I become one with that consciousness and I go beyond the sat, I go beyond existence in deep meditation, when I become one with that consciousness, and at that time I lose all body awareness, which they call samadhi in deep meditation, then I experience Anand, the bliss, the infinite joy. That's why people in meditation, when their mind becomes still, describe brief moments of joy, little bit of bliss, little bit of joy, not bliss, but little bit of joy arising. But a realized master, somebody like Shankaracharya or Gurudev Swami Chinmayananda or Jesus or Buddha, they constantly live in that state of consciousness, and so they constantly experience the bliss of God. So the Anand is experienced when you go beyond body consciousness, when you are living in that state of, it does not mean that they do not function in the world. In fact, they function better than you and I, because they do not work for themselves. They work for the totality, work for the whole, the consciousness. So when an individual is constantly in that state of chit, then he or she experiences Anand. That's why Mirabai, no matter how much problem she had in the world, she never became sorrowful. She used to say, Mere to Giridhar Gopal Dusra Na Koi, Jaake Sir Mor Mukut, Mero Pati Soi. He says, I, Krishna, I have adopted as my husband. No matter what the world does to me, they cannot give me sorrow because I have become one with that. Same thing, Jesus, whatever he went through, all these great saints, you know, all the Sikh gurus, how much they were tortured, you know, by the Muslims and all. But they did not lose their faith because they had become one with that Lord within. So they say that the lower, the more you are identified with Sat, with this gross body, you are lower in our existence. As the more you say, I am this body, and take care of this body, and nourish the body, and feed the body, and clothe the body, and buy things for the body, the more you identify with the existence, the lower you are in your evolution. If you want to evolve, get out of this body identification. Say, I am that spirit. I am that consciousness. And I am functioning through this body. I am not this body. This body is my vehicle. And we will be talking in the main hall. I will be telling the children, Gurudev said, live in the minimum, create the maximum. and give the entire thing to the world outside. What he meant was, create the maximum, work as hard as you can, but not for yourself. For yourself, you live in the minimum. And whatever is left, give it to the entire thing, to the world outside. So if you want to evolve, go from I to us, us to the whole universe. See the whole universe as an expression of God, as an expression of me. And once you have experienced yourself as divinity and everybody else as divinity, I am as divine as her and her and him, then there is no hatred. Then who is there to hate? Everybody is all total love, total compassion, total oneness. So that is the state. That's why in Vedanta they say that the people reach a state of Kevalam. Kevalam, in the Kevalya Upanishad, which we are doing on Thursday evening, they very beautifully describe the state of Kevalam, oneness, where there is one and one alone, nothing else. For a wise person, everything is me. He sees that. So that is what this verse tells us. How can we evolve from lower to higher? Do not stay in that ego, because when you are in that ego, then you get anger and pride and jealousy and arrogance and all. And evolve slowly, because we all are potentially divine. All of us can become Mahatma Gandhi. All of us, you know, we celebrated his birthday. All of us can become Jesus. All of us can become Shankaracharya. We all have the potential. We just have to tap into it. Atman, the Brahman, the consciousness is equal in every one of us. So that's what Sri Krishna says, that see the divinity and practice it and apply that. So very, very beautiful verse. Any comments, any discussion on it? Yes.
You said God became consciousness.
Yes. Well, God is consciousness.
Well, that's what I'm wondering. Is God consciousness?
He is consciousness. He didn't become. He is all three. But he became the five elements. And then that's what in the Gita it says, Mama Yonir Mahat Brahma Tasmin Garbham Tadhamyaham. He says he first created the womb, which is Brahmaji, the creator, which is Prakriti, which is the five elements. And then just as in a womb they place a seed, so in our Upanishads they describe that there was this egg, which was a celestial egg, and a beam of fire energy penetrated, and that's how this whole world came into being, you know, the Big Bang theory. So he says that the energy is what is that Brahman. And so actually everything is him. The Prakriti is him and Purusha is him. The matter and spirit are all, everything is that Brahman alone. But for understanding, they put as two. One is the matter, which is inert, and one is the consciousness, which enters the matter and then enlivens it.
So there are just different ways of explaining.
Yes. Yes. It's just different ways of explaining creation. In the 14th chapter, he talks about how the creation came into being. So that's what he says, Mamar Yonir Mahat Brahma Tasmin Garbham Tadhamyam. Yes.
So when you are keep referencing them, they are bad people, but they were good people with Shubhaktas, right?
Well, see, everybody had a choice. You have a choice. You know, you may say that, you know, they were cursed and all. But the point was, once they came on earth and got the intellect, they had a choice. They say by hating God also you can reach him. That's true. The more you hate him constantly, actually when you hate somebody, you think a lot more of them than when you love somebody. So that's why, but in my opinion, you can keep hating God, but then your mind is constantly filled with anger and, you know, hostility. And why do you want to live a life like that? The life is miserable. Why don't you love him? It is so much better.
Huh? The God created that way.
No, a lot of these stories are very symbolic. You know, you have to look at the symbolism behind the story. Look at the symbolism rather than the actual story. The symbolism of this story is that when you think of God, you become closer to him. Whether you think with anger or you think with love, But in my opinion, it is infinitely better to think with love. Or I would rather be Prahlad rather than Hiranyakashyapu. If you had a choice, would you be Prahlad or would you be Hiranyakashyapu? So we have to apply this in our life. It's okay, the history passed, whatever Hiranyakashyap did and whatever considered. I was just giving it an example that would you want to live your life as, you know, simple? Would you want to live your life as Mirabai or would you, you know, so the point is that it is infinitely better to love him than to hate him. But either way, if you think about God, you will get closer and you will get moksha, no doubt. You will get moksha by hating, but is that a pleasant way to live? Hiranyakashyapu was not a happy individual. Ravana was not. Kansa was not. They were very unhappy because they knew God is coming to get us. So, I mean, but your point is right.
Yeah, and how to uplift them instead of keep giving and they can keep coming to the right.
No, that's a good question. So again, rather than worry about others, I worry about myself. That how am I going to live my life? And you have to give to the right individual, give to the right cause. That's why in Gita, they also talk about sattvic, rajasic and tamasic dan. That sattvic dan is given to the right individual at the right time in the right quantity, where somebody is deserving, like somebody is going to school and studying and you help him with his tuition, for example. That is a sattvic dan. But if there's an alcoholic walking on the street and you give him $20 so he can drink, that is tamasic dan. And rajasic dan is dan that is given for, you know, my glorification so people may praise me. So one has to be selective. And it's true, you cannot reform the whole world. You cannot change. But at least in my life, let me make the world a little better than when I first came on this earth. That's why they say, what is that? Tum haso tab roye, you know, aisi karni. Says Kabira, it says, tum aaye jagat mein. Tum jag hasa tum roye, aisi karni kar chalo, tum haso jag roye. So he says, when you came on this earth, you cried when you were born and the world was celebrating. But when you leave the world, you should be laughing that I did something worthwhile. And the people will cry because the great soul has died. So that is how one should live one's life. And I cannot change the whole humanity. I cannot change, you know, people living in the slums. But if I can make a difference even in one individual's life, my life is worthwhile. So that's how one should look at life. And again, rather than thinking about the totality, everybody, you know, who can I help? You know, we cannot be like Jesus or Buddha or Swami Chinmayananda. We cannot illumine the whole universe, but I can at least be a lamp in my neighborhood.
Ravana, he got his all power.
Right.
So, how he hated God?
See, right. So he got his power by worshipping Lord Shiva, but then he became arrogant. And then he said, you know, I'm the most powerful, and he conquered even the heavens and even Indra, and everybody was afraid of him. And then he kidnapped Sita ji, and they told him that Ram is incarnation of Vishnu and he's coming. He said, I don't care. So he had that much anger and hatred towards Ram, even though he knew that this was God himself. So he lived his life in anger and in hostility.
My mom says that they have done purpose, I mean, he has done purpose because he wanted the death from the God's hand.
Yeah, that is true. They say if you die at God's hand, you get moksha. That's what we are talking about. But it's better to die lovingly, loving God, and let him take you lovingly rather than angrily. That is true. We all die at God's hand. Ultimately, how do we die? There he was shot directly by Ramchandra ji. But either way, when we leave the body, it is God himself who takes us away. So live your life filled with love rather than anger. That's the message we're trying to convey in this verse.
He was doing it with some intention.
Right. With a selfish intention, he worshipped. Yes, absolutely. Most of these Rakshasis, they got boons because they did lot of tapas. They did lot of penance for years and years, but with the intention of becoming more powerful.
This world is open to so much corruption.
Yes.
So how do we lead the child?
I think
how do we also prepare us?
Right. I think we had talked in the previous verse last week or the week before, that It's like live like a lotus. You know, lotus flower is worshipped in our scriptures. Why? Because lotus grows in dirt, in the dirtiest water, in the mud. But still, when it comes out, it spreads fragrance, it spreads beauty. So live your life like a lotus. The world will be dirty, will be corrupt. But instead of letting that dirt get you, live, rise above it. ये इसमें नहीं है, we are उसमें दूसरे में से कर रहे हैं, we are doing it. So live your life like a lotus and make yourself free from the dirt. I mean, because in the same world, Mahatmas also lived. Mahatma Gandhi lived in that world and Jesus lived in that world and Shankaracharya and Chinmayananda and all of them lived in that same world as you and I live, but they did not let the world get affect them. They say it's like a boat. You know, a boat, you ride on the boat, but don't let the water get into the boat. If the water gets into the boat, it will sink. So you live in the world, but don't let the world get into you. Because once the world gets into you, you will sink. So keep yourself above the world, and the right values help us. That's why children should be taught value, should be taught what is the right things to do. And the teaching starts from home, from mother and father, and then from, you know, school. And then Bal Vihar, we also try to teach the values to the children through Ramayana and Mahabharata and all. So giving them values gives them a kavach, gives them a shield that protects them in the world when they go out. So that is the shield. That's what we can do. Ultimately, they have to go to college and they have to deal with that. And some of them, they have not been given the right values. They fall prey easily to the peer pressure as opposed to those who have been given value, I think.
Is there a good anger and bad anger, or you just never should get anger and be dispassionate and detached? I mean, how do you do this?
See, when they hear karma, they're not talking about passion, they're talking about lust. They're talking about an insatiable desire, and that is lust, and that is what karma is. Karma is not passion, even though they may have translated it. But the true meaning of karma is the insatiable lust for acquiring, and when you don't get that, then you get angry because something came, you know, in my way. But having a passion for a cause is not wrong. It's not wrong. But anger generally is wrong. I mean, you may occasionally, like Swami Chinmayananda says, he uses anger sometimes is needed to say discipline a child or an employee and all. But generally, in general, talking to a child with love or talking to an employee softly is more likely to get results than doing it with anger. So by and large, one should avoid anger. As I had mentioned last week, anger is like a hot coal. When you throw it at somebody, you will get burnt first. Anger burns you. And if you talk to Muniji, the one who came to Bharti's house, he says, never get angry. He's such a calm individual. Because anger hurts us more than it will hurt the other person. So in by and large, anger should not, you may choose some strong words to discipline or help somebody, but inside you should be still calm. You may even use some strong language to convince somebody or talk to somebody, but in general, one should be as calm as possible. Do not let the anger get inside you, because that's a negative quality.
When you talk about, so you really can't approach really anybody with anger if you want to correct them or show them a different way. You know, you do have to get yourself calmed down.
Right. That's true. Then it'll be more lasting. Otherwise, and then in anger, you may hit somebody, and, you know, and we find examples of people, you know, who beat their children so badly, they ended up in the emergency room and all. But if you can still discipline a child by doing things like time out and, you know, things like that, which are more calming rather than physical violence and all. Thank you.
Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinah, Sarve Santu Niramayah, Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu, Kaschid Dukha Bhavave. Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Guru Pyo Namah Hari Om.
Thank you.